An Air Force B-52 is down near Guam. Midwest Airlines says it will cut service to 11 U.S. cities. And Doug Parker says the industry, and U.S. Airways in particular, will survive. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. EAA Air Venture Oshkosh opens in less than a week, and our team is already digging in at Whitman. Our coverage will be ramping up as this week progresses. But here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, July 22, 2008. A U.S. Air Force B-52 bomber, slated to perform a flyover during Guam's Liberation Day parade, crashed off the territory's coast on Monday, and at least four crew members are still missing. The Associated Press reports the Stratofortress went down at 9:45 a.m. local time Monday morning, about 30 miles northwest of Opera Harbor, and rescuers were immediately dispatched to the scene. At least two occupants have been recovered. Their conditions, though, are not yet known. Floating wreckage and the sheen of jet fuel on the water are said to mark the accident site. As was the case after a B-2 Spirit bomber crashed in Guam in February, all B-52 operations have been halted indefinitely while investigators work to determine the cause. The Midwest Air Group has announced specifics of upcoming service cutbacks resulting from the carrier's decision to ground its thirsty MD-80 series airliners to fight dramatic increases in fuel costs. And the changes are not just on a list of small towns. Bloomberg cites a Sunday statement by the airline in reporting that on September 8th, Midwest will stop flying to Fort Lauderdale and Fort Myers in Florida and San Diego, California. Service to Los Angeles and Seattle will continue, but will be routed through Kansas City. Baltimore, Hartford, St. Louis, San Antonio, and Louisville will no longer enjoy Midwest Connect regional jet service after September 8th, and Midwest's Milwaukee to Orlando flights will run only October through April. Overall, the list of cities served by Northwest will shrink from 47 to 32. As predicted, routes favored mostly by personal and vacation travelers are overrepresented among the cuts. That segment of the market is especially sensitive to fare increases. The early retirement of the MD-80s leaves the airline with a trimmer fleet of 25 smaller Boeing 717s. Midwest was acquired in February by Northwest Airlines and private equity firm TPG. We've been hearing for months now how mergers among the legacy U.S. airlines to create fewer, larger carriers is an important strategy for surviving runaway fuel prices. If bigger is better, what hope is there for the smallest of the major U.S. carriers, U.S. Airways? After all, U.S. Airways CEO Doug Parker has been rebuffed twice recently in merger attempts, first with Delta, then with United. Does this mean that U.S. Airways is on the ropes? Parker recently was interviewed by the editorial board of the Philadelphia Inquirer. A U.S. Airways collapse would be a big deal in Philly, which Parker says is the airline's largest market, the one which generates the most revenue, and an important gateway to profitable international routes. Parker defiantly told the paper, quote, "If there are other airlines whose strategies are based on U.S. Airways going away, they'd better find a different strategy. There is no imminent risk. We have thankfully done a good job of generating cash and saving it," unquote. He added that the recent emailed letter signed by 12 airline CEOs has been successful in motivating Americans to pressure Congress to reform the oil markets and regulate market speculation. Parker also told the editors what the world will be like if oil prices continue their rampage. He says airlines will start collecting $650 to $700 per passenger for a ticket. Planes will fly primarily to big cities and not a lot of small communities. Air travel will be a throwback to the era before deregulation, once again becoming a luxury. Despite what he calls the worst crisis to face the industry in 22 years he's been involved, Parker predicts, quote, "The industry will work it out, and there will still be six of us, but six smaller airlines," unquote. The Douglas DC-3 entered service in 1935. Over 10,000 were ultimately built, and the plane played critical roles in some of the biggest events of the 20th century. The type ferried countless GIs during World War II, had a major role in the Berlin airlift, has starred in Hollywood movies for decades, and has lived on to remain a favorite of aviation fans of all ages. But what Hitler and Hirohito could not do, European Union bureaucrats finally have. We're sad to report the three remaining DC-3s offering commercial passenger flights in the UK have now been grounded by overreaching safety regulations. Reuters reports that today brings on new EU rules that require any planes used for commercial passenger service to retrofit weather radar, oxygen masks, and escape slides. The rules don't make room to exempt antiques like the DC-3, even though those that remain in service don't fly in weather conditions requiring radar, are not flown at altitudes that require oxygen, and have exit doors just 4 feet off the ground. The DC-3s are also known as Dakotas in the UK. The last three of them flying passengers in the UK have been operated by Air Atlantique Classic Flight Limited, using planes retired by the British military in the early 70s. Air Atlantique's commercial director, Richard Parr, says, quote, "It's really about keeping these aircraft living and flying for people to see and not putting them in museums to become, as we call it, stuffed birds," unquote. The company flew about 9,000 passengers on the DC-3s as part of a Goodbye Dakotas tour between April 19th and the last day of operations yesterday. Coming up next, Qatar Armed Forces will buy at least one C-17 Globemaster III from Boeing. NTSB will participate in a Korean investigation of a helicopter crash. And will NASA soon be using a Japanese cargo spacecraft? You're listening to Aero News.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 22, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Boeing reports it signed an agreement yesterday with the government of Qatar for the purchase of the C-17 Globemaster III airlifter, to provide new strategic airlift mobility capabilities for the Qatar Armed Forces. Boeing, which builds the plane in Long Beach, California, will begin deliveries to the QAF next summer. Major General Hamad bin Ali al-Attiyah, QAF Chief of Staff, notes, quote, "This agreement marks a new era in Qatar's ability to provide strategic airlift in support of our military and humanitarian operations," unquote. Boeing is on contract to design, build, deliver, and support 190 C-17s for the U.S. Air Force, with budget for 15 more recently approved by Congress. Britain, Canada, and Australia have bought still more. Boeing's announcement made no mention of the number of planes involved in the QAF contract. Tommy Donahue, Boeing International C-17 Program Manager, says interest in the plane remains high. Quote, "Reliability and maintainability are two outstanding benefits of the C-17 system," unquote. The National Transportation Safety Board has dispatched a team of investigators to assist the government of Korea in its investigation of Saturday's crash of a Korean-registered Sikorsky S-92A helicopter equipped with General Electric engines. At about 5:20 p.m. local time, the helicopter made a hard landing and burned after colliding with trees and other ground obstacles as the pilot attempted a precautionary landing on a nearby helipad in challenging weather. Of the 16 occupants, preliminary reports indicate 3 suffered severe injuries and 7 suffered minor injuries. Among those who were injured was the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, founder of the Unification Church. The Associated Press reports Moon was released from the hospital on Sunday. There were no reported injuries on the ground. NTSB will be assisted by technical advisors from the FAA, Sikorsky Aircraft Corporation, and General Electric. NASA has reportedly begun unofficial negotiations with Japan's space agency to use an unmanned cargo transfer spacecraft as the successor to its space shuttles. The Yomiuri newspaper said on Sunday the deal would be the biggest in Japan's 50-year space program. The H-2 transfer vehicle costs about $131 million U.S. It's being developed by the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, using domestic contractors including Mitsubishi Heavy Industries and Mitsubishi Electric Corp. The H-2 can carry up to 6 metric tons of cargo. Japan already plans to launch one per year. That's not counting any extra contract work for NASA. The paper says negotiations with NASA began in February, growing out of U.S. concerns about being able to meet commitments to supply the International Space Station after the retirement of the U.S. Space Shuttle fleet in 2010. The paper was unable to confirm the report with officials at the Japanese Space Agency. When you see the headline announcing that the Iraqi Air Force this year has reached a milestone with 2,000 flight hours after 11 months in operation at Kirkuk Regional Air Base, maybe that number doesn't sound like such a big deal to you. After all, we're accustomed to hearing how Embry-Riddle students log 88,000 hours a year. But Embry-Riddle has a fleet of about 100 aircraft, and enrollment is over 6,000 at its two campuses. The Iraqi Air Force started 11 months ago in a corner of a general-purpose shelter, furnished with a piece of plywood across two sawhorses and no aircraft, and still has only 27 students. Also worth noting, Embry-Riddle students aren't being shot at. Now that we've put this 2,000-hour achievement in its appropriately impressive perspective, we should note that the accomplishments have come with the help of U.S. Airmen from the 52nd Expeditionary Flying Training Squadron. Their commander is Lieutenant Colonel Mark Bennett, who asks us to, quote, consider the fact all the families are living in Baghdad under the current threat of insurgency, and all the folks who would like to see us fail. They are amazingly courageous individuals to come here and do this, unquote. The milestone has been reached with no mishaps in more than 70 solo sorties. The training program now averages 20 sorties a day, all of them logged as combat time. Iraqi Air Force Colonel Basim, the Iraqi Flying Training Wing Deputy Commander, credits teamwork for the milestone. Quote, we don't say Iraqi or U.S. As pilots and instructor pilots, we are a team. We are brothers. That is why we have success in our jobs. Unquote. Still ahead, the Harriers return to Oshkosh next week. Bell Helicopter makes a generous donation to celebrate 60 years in law enforcement service. And the Pennsylvania State Police would like to sell you a Cessna. You're listening to Aero News.
An easy flight is a safe flight. That's why L3 Avionics Systems designed the most advanced glass cockpit system available to be intuitive and easy to use. The Smart Deck integrated flight controls and display system shows you what you need to know when you need to know it, because the system was created around the way pilots fly. With Smart Deck, interaction between pilot and aircraft is fluid, and advanced technology puts you in control with an extra layer of safety. Fly SmartDeck to get the ultimate glass cockpit experience at AirVenture or visit smartdeck.com.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, July 22nd, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. A loud and proud crowd favorite will return to the grounds at Whitman Field this year. The U.S. Marine Corps AV-8B Harrier II jump jet will appear at EAA Air Venture Oshkosh, arriving on Monday, July 28th, and departing following the daily air show on Wednesday, the 30th. The AV-8B Harrier II is designed for combat air support, as well as combat air patrol, missions against ground defenses, and armed escort. It's 46 feet long with a wingspan of 30 feet. It can reach transonic speeds and has radar systems similar to those found in the F-A-18 fighters. The Marines first deployed the Harrier II in 1985, with the upgraded AV-8B2 Plus model introduced in 1993. The aircraft is the latest descendant of the original British Harrier jump jet that first appeared in the early 1960s. Bell Helicopter is celebrating its 60-year history of supplying helicopters to law enforcement agencies around the world by donating a Bell 206B to the National Law Enforcement Museum. Paul Pitts, Bell's Director for Homeland Security, explains, quote, "Bell is proud to be associated with the museum and its commitment to telling the story of law enforcement in America," unquote. The first Bell helicopter in civilian law enforcement service was a Model 47 flying with the New York PD. The company now has a wide range of products performing law enforcement missions, including the Bell 206, which has become an industry standard. When it opens in 2011, the 95,000-square-foot law enforcement museum will provide an estimated 600,000 visitors a year with a unique and comprehensive look into the law enforcement profession. The museum will feature high-tech interactive exhibits, interesting historical and contemporary artifacts, extensive public and educational programming, and a research center and library. Pennsylvania State Police Commissioner Jeffrey Miller announced last week that five Cessna 182s used by that agency for tracking criminals, finding missing persons, and other missions are being offered for sale to the general public. He says, quote, "These Cessna 182s have provided vital aerial support for state police operations and for other law enforcement agencies across the Commonwealth. Because of their key role in our department's day-to-day functions, these aircraft have been maintained to the highest standards by our expert aviation mechanics," unquote. Well, hey, at least he didn't say they accumulated only highway miles with little old ladies at the yoke. Miller said the planes might be an ideal fit for flight schools, tour operators, or charter and rental use. The Skylanes range in age from 8 to 27 years and in price from $86,000 to $188,000. They'll be replaced by four leased Cessna 206H Stationairs. And finally, 200 airline passengers coming in from Tampa arrived in Detroit Sunday evening on a bus. No, not an Airbus, and no, they weren't on Skybus. This was just a bus. The Detroit News reports that Northwest Airlines Flight 491, a Boeing 757, lost an engine computer in flight. The crew shut down the engine as a precaution and made an emergency landing at Dayton International Airport in Ohio Sunday afternoon at 12:26 p.m. local time. The Associated Press reports that interrupted the Vectren Dayton Air Show, which was underway on a different part of the airport grounds. With little else to do for 25 minutes, the air show announcer kept the crowd briefed on the status of the emergency landing, explaining that a 757 can operate on one engine without difficulty. The passengers probably weren't too happy about finishing their day with a 3.5-hour bus ride from Dayton to Detroit, but the airshow crowd was delighted at the unscheduled attraction, and they let out a cheer when the plane touched down safely during the airshow. And these days, when airline executives hear cheering, they're not too picky about who it's coming from. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Richard Kane of Coastal Technologies Group. And we'll talk about a new website that works like Expedia or Travelocity, only you're booking general aviation flights, sometimes at prices lower than what the airlines would charge for that same flight. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. You'll find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.